The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bowman, and I'm joined by my co-host today, Gray Oldenburg and Nathan Glidewell. Well, week two did happen, especially for Gray. He's having some issues. And that's not even talking about just college football, because the NFL is a whole different animal that I really don't have time to go over today, because that could be a whole hour-long show. As Carolina Panthers fans, Bryce Young, Dave Canales, David Tepper, I could say so much, but we're going to focus on college football today. And Nathan, I know we usually start off with the Alabama Crimson Tide, but I think it's only fair from what Gray had to go through this weekend with Auburn and Carolina Panthers that he gets to start off today's show talking about the Auburn Tigers and their 21-14 loss to Cal. So Gray, just start us off with what happened in this loss.
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for cutting the NFL out of today's show. I really don't want to talk about the NFL, especially with one of our co-hosts being the team that absolutely just embarrassed the Carolina Panthers on Sunday. So I'm happy to be away from that. That's at least one thing that I can, you know, put aside for right now. But on to talking about what in the absolute hell happened in Jordan-Hare Stadium on Saturday afternoon. You know, I've come on this podcast many, many times before, especially throughout this past offseason, this long offseason that Auburn fans have had with all these, you know, incoming recruits and transfers and what we're going to see from year two from Hugh Freeze and, you know, new coordinators. Still got Peyton Thorne at quarterback, for the love of God. And I said many, many times, this team is going to go as far as Peyton Thorne is going to take it. I said that many times. I said Peyton Thorne could take this team to 10-2, 9-3, and have potential to have a really good season because Hugh Freeze is built around him beautifully. But we also saw many, many times last year how inconsistent Peyton Thorne was. And it doesn't look like it's gotten any better at all. What Hugh Freeze and this staff did this past offseason was say, no, I trust in the fifth-year senior quarterback who has had success at big-time level football with help around him. Said, no, we're going to go get that help, put together one of the best running back rooms in the SEC, brought back four starting offensive linemen, brought in the number one transfer portal wide receiver, brought in the top wide receiver class out of the freshman class, brought back your second team all-SEC tight end, and brought in a play caller to go along with Hugh Freeze from last year's like third best offense in the country. And you still look like that against California. Yeah, I'm fed up with it. They're fed up with it. Auburn fans are fed up with it. And it's getting ridiculous. And it just shows how ridiculous it's been over the past 3-4 years. I know some of that was Brian Harsin and, you know, the ending of Gus Malzahn's tenure and how that kind of turned out. A lot of it was injuries, but how bad the quarterback play has been when, you know, every other position in this game, even I can go back and I can point to a few players that just had outstanding football games and were wide open or we're making plays on the defensive end or in any way possible. I can go through in each position and go, that guy had a really good game, you know, individually. And I will do that in a second to end on a good note. I will do that. But the quarterback play has been so pathetic ever since Bo Nix transferred out of Auburn. Auburn's starting quarterbacks since then have been TJ Finley, Robbie Ashford, Holden Gariner, and Peyton Thorne. There is absolutely no reason that a team with the history of Pat Sullivan and Cam Newton and Jason Campbell and Nick Marshall, even guys like, you know, Jarrett Stidham and guys like that, and Bo Nix, should have to struggle this much at quarterback. Now, Hugh Freeze said in his Monday presser and on Tiger Talk on Monday afternoon, right after the time we're recording this, that there is going to be an open competition this week. He has always trusted and believed in the fact that he wants to put the quarterback that is most consistently having success in practice out on the field every Saturday. But he also understands that that has got to translate into the games and into production. And it's not like we haven't seen Peyton Thorne be viable. Peyton Thorne was viable a week ago. There were many games last year that Peyton Thorne, I wouldn't say was the key to Auburn's success, but he was good enough to get Auburn a win. Peyton Thorne was the reason you lost this game Saturday. Because just like I said a moment ago, there are, at every other position I could go to and go, that guy had a really good game. That guy really showed out. Especially on the defensive end, man. This Auburn team was fantastic defensively. The only reason Cal scored that much is because Auburn's offense gave them unbelievable position. And also, the time of possession in this game was like 3-1 ratio in favor of Cal. This defense was exhausted, especially a defense that doesn't have the depth that they're going to have next year or the next year. This loss is on Peyton Thorne. There were so many. The play calling was great. I thought the only play call that was questionable was the 4th-and-2 while Auburn was driving on their second drive. But then again, Peyton Thorne tried to throw a lob up to Cam Coleman over the middle when there was a safety playing off of Cam Coleman instead of hitting Robert Lewis, who was nobody within 30 yards of him on a slant route for a first down and probably a touchdown. There's absolutely no reason that Auburn shouldn't have won this game by 30 points. Auburn is by far a more talented team than California and will continue to be a more talented team than California. You give credit to them. Their quarterback looked great. He was efficient. You know, they didn't have big explosive plays. They knew that Auburn's defense was getting exhausted. And throughout the game, that's just what they did. They just methodically marched the ball down the field when they had to. And the lack of big plays from Auburn and the great field position given to the Cal offense, I'd say made it pretty easy. There are some spots in the defensive end that needed work. I'd say there are a few times where Auburn's cornerbacks, Kante Scott, Kay and Lee, Champ Anthony, weren't turning around and finding the ball while the ball was in the air a couple of times. You know, that's a mistake. Those are things you can go and change on film. That's something that Charles Kelly and Wesley McGriff are very, very good at and have proven that many, many years before. But, oh my goodness. There were so many plays where we had a wide receiver running wide open. You can't blame it on the receivers anymore. You can't blame it on the offensive line. Thorne had an average time in the pocket of almost 4 seconds. That is insane. Compared to last year, it wasn't even 2 seconds. Auburn wasn't able to establish the run in this game, but I don't think the running backs played bad. Jarquez Hunter had 77 yards. I don't think you had a good enough rotation at running back, but you were playing from behind in most of this game. You were trying to sling it around. And then, you know, Auburn finally feels like they've got a chance. They score with about 6 minutes left. Defense gets a stop. Get the ball back. Another interception. Okay, defense gets the ball back again. Again, they stop this team. First play interception. I'm really excited and really looking forward to these skill positions and how they develop over the course of the season into the next offseason. I'm excited for the especially the wide receivers, and we've been talking about that a lot. The quarterback play over the last 4 years at Auburn has been pathetic. And you can't blame this. I know, yes, you blame the coaches always because the coaches have got to find a way to do better. You can't blame the coaches or the play calling or any of the defense, or you can't blame the wide receivers. They were open. You can't blame the offensive line. Thorne had time. It's consistently inconsistent every single time. And I'm sure next week is going to be something completely different. And because that's just how it is. I do want to talk about some positives before I let this off to Nathan and to talk about the Alabama game. I really want to talk about how good this defense was. Again, we talked about it last week. It was Alabama A&M. They were going to look fantastic. The Alabama A&M is just not good. California, I wouldn't say they're top notch. They wouldn't be a good SEC team or anything like that, but they've got much better athletes on the offensive end. I thought Keldrick Falk looked like a all SEC defensive end. I think he has finally come into his own. You know, last year saw a lot of freshman mistakes. This year, it looks like he's a dog. He had three tackles for loss. He had two sacks, eight total tackles. Guy was everywhere. Guy played out of his mind. He was the highest graded player on Auburn's team as well. Keontae Scott played great. The safeties, Jaron Thompson from Texas, played outstanding. Jalen McLeod is going to be a beast. It's hard to look if you cover up the quarterback play and you cover up the five turnovers. It's hard to look at this game and go, how did Cal win? Because Auburn just looks better on the stat sheet. But then you pull up the quarterback play and it's like, oh, that's how they won. That's how they won. The last thing about Thorne, man, it's you can get mad at a freshman or a redshirt freshman or a guy with no experience for making freshman mistakes. But that's just going to be part of it. Those are growing pains. I'm not about to sit here and continue to get mad at a fifth-year senior with 4 years of experience for making freshman mistakes. There's no point in that. And there should be no point in the coaches having to address that at all. That shouldn't be something that we're discussing today. But we are. Needs to be a change, but excited for the future of this team outside of Peyton Thorne.
Okay, before I hand it off to Nathan, you kind of touched on it a little bit, but why was Jarquez Hunter, Damari Alston, and Jeremiah Cobb really not featured in this game a lot? Jarquez only had 12 carries. Damari and Jeremiah only combined for three. You saw it last week where they didn't run the ball a lot, but that was, granted, they're up like 70 points on Alabama A&M, and I know they were down a lot this game, but when Peyton Thorne's throwing the ball to the other team, why do you not lean on your running game more? And why did Hugh Freeze not really do that?
Yeah, well, early in the game, it sounded like the game plan was more to sling it around. The hole in California's defense was their secondary, especially their safeties. They're inexperienced. They weren't as good. So I think that was the game plan to start. And on the first drive, Auburn drove right down the field through the air. It was a long pass to Cam Coleman. It was a quick pass to Keandre Lambert-Smith. Made a circus catch in the end zone for a touchdown. It seemed like that's where they were going to have success. And they tried to lean on that, even though Thorne was not in rhythm at all. And then they got behind. And, you know, Jarquez Hunter only had like three carries at halftime. He got most of his carries in the second half and had run for some nice runs. That strength of that California defense was that front seven. I know that there's where they wanted to clear away from. And in the fourth quarter, they were like, we've got to find something. Because just like I said, they were getting these receivers open and they were game planning perfectly. Derek Nix put up a beautiful game plan against this California defense, along with Hugh Freeze and Kent Austin and those guys. Thorne just couldn't hit a broadside of a barn door. It is just ridiculous. I do want to see, you touched on it just a second ago, Alex. I do want to see more rotation at that running back slot. I know Jarquez Hunter is fantastic. I know he's amazing, but especially as Auburn gets into that meat of that SEC schedule, where it's going to be very, very tough week after week after week. I do want to see Jeremiah Cobb more. I do want to see Damari Alston on more goal line sets and stuff like that. We've got three very good running backs. Don't rely on Jarquez. You don't have to rely on him like you did like Tank Bigsby a couple of years ago, where it's just like he's getting exhausted, or Kerryon Johnson when he got hurt in the SEC championship game. It's because we were running him 40 times a game. You don't have to do that with Jarquez Hunter. Let's spread it around a little bit.
All right, Nathan, let's flip over to Alabama here and their 42-14 win over USF. A little bit misleading, that final score, because going into the fourth, it was a 14-13 game. And then you make one substitution and it feels like the script was flipped. You have two big runs from Justice Haynes and Jam Miller, and it really opened up that game. But what were your thoughts on the entirety of that game, Nathan, and the struggles Alabama faced up into that fourth quarter?
Well, first of all, I think I'm going to start a new segment on the show. It's going to be Nathan's Word of the Week. And the word of this week is going to be change. And when we decide to make it, because obviously Greg pointed out in the Auburn game that there needed to be some change. And it was never made. And in the Alabama game, there was a change made. It just came way too late in the game. I want to preface this by saying the amount of penalties in the game were atrocious. I thought the officiating crew did a terrible job. I saw more of them on the screen than I actually was able to watch the game. Both teams combined for, 24 penalties, I think like 212 penalty yards, which is absolutely absurd. We're trying to watch a football game. We didn't come to watch people officiate. But the refs made it all about them and took away from the game a lot. And I'm not saying that neither of the teams did illegal stuff. I mean, because there were a lot of things that I could come on here and critique. I could break down film for you and point out every single thing that people did bad. But the refs making it about themselves really took away from the game as a whole, which I hated. Let's see, where should I start here? I think I'll go ahead and just dive deep into Alabama's offensive line and, or lack thereof, because Jalen Milroe might as well have just snapped the ball to himself and just ran around the backfield the entire time rather than being able to do anything else. The run game was non-existent because we couldn't get any push up front. Pass protection was crap, absolute crap. And I don't want to blame it on one guy, but Logan Formby might as well not play another down in football because he cannot pass protect properly. It got so bad where I'm watching him every single play and he is messing up. He is getting tight end hell. He's getting running back hell and he's still getting blown by. That type of play will get you benched in high school, let alone college. I know we go back to the Caden Proctor injury. He's out. We've had to shuffle the whole line around. Elijah Pritchett, it came out that he was a little banged up, but I think that's the worst part, that if he's a little banged up and he's still having to go into the game, that's how putrid Wilkin Formby's performance was. He had close to half of the offensive line's penalties. I think they had 9 total.
He had 4.
Wilkin Formby had 4 of them. That doesn't even count the amount of pressures he gave up, the amount of sacks. Unbelievably crappy performance from him. And I don't understand. I got to give credit to USF here because I think their defensive line is very athletic and they are very talented, and they came out and they just punched us in the mouth and we just sat there and took it. And I don't know why it took so long to make adjustments. I really don't. And if it goes back to just injuries, then it's a little bit more understandable. But to sit there for 3 quarters and just not have an answer for what's going on really made me mad. I mean, it made every single fan this stadium mad. I mean, with the people around me, I mean, we were saying and seeing the exact same thing over and over and over again, and it's every single drive it would happen. The amount of 3 and outs that we went through, I mean, we didn't establish the running game. They were just loading the box, begging us to throw, and big problem there, can't throw because we don't have more than 1 second in the pocket. I think that the play calling should have been a little bit better to set Joe Miller up for better situations. A lot of deep pass plays called. Thought there were a lot of penalties missed on that. I think that's one thing the refs got wrong in the game, was that I thought they let the secondary USF kind of hand fight a little too much. And you could probably say that for Alabama too. But at that halftime, you want to see your team come out and completely flip the script. I mean, you can point out what's wrong, and we've seen what needs to be adjusted, and we come out and we do the same thing. And I really hate this because Kendrick Law tried to make a play opening the second half, and he just fumbles on the kickoff return. And we give it right back to USF, and it's just we kept shooting ourselves in the foot over and over and over again, like 3 fumbles. 3 fumbles. I mean, it's crucial. You do that against any SEC team, you're going to lose that game. Not to mention the number of penalties you had. I mean, that's just stacked on top of it. It's like if you could continuously mess up over and over and over again against a team like USF and still win, it's incredible. And I think that comes down to the substitution that was made to put Elijah Pritchard in for Wilkin Formby at right tackle, because as soon as he comes in the game, Alabama scores in three plays. The time Elijah Pritchard was on the field, I think it totaled to around 6 minutes, maybe 6 minutes. I think Alabama ran close to, I'll say 12 plays. That's probably a little bit over. I think it was closer to 10. They scored 21 points in that amount of time. It's absurd. One change can make. I don't understand how we can go through an entire game and not make the changes when they need to be made. It seems obvious to people who watch it, but when you go down the sideline, I know it's a little bit more complicated. And I think you want the person that you started to prove something to you that you made the right decision to put them in that situation. And unfortunately, Wilkin Formby just did not do that. I don't know where he stands on the roster going forward. I don't know if he'll play again. Alabama's offensive line, I don't know if Ken Proctor will be back this week. Kellen DeBoer said he's making progress, so I'm hoping he'll be back this week. I think Elijah Pritchard should be good to go against Wisconsin next week. It was really pathetic to see Alabama not be able to just impose their will at times against USF, which they are a really good team, but you're coming out against a group of five team and you got to be able to go and respond after being punched in the mouth. I felt like Alabama struggled to do that, and waiting till there's 6 minutes left in the game to do that really just did not sit right with me.
You kind of touched on the issues with the offensive line, Nathan, but the defense did play really well outside of the secondary, where there was multiple times where the secondary got burnt. And if the USF quarterback Byron Brown was remotely accurate, if that was Jackson Dart back there or Quinn Ewers, this game might have been a lot different going into halftime than it was. It might have been a 24-7 lead for USF, but he missed a lot of open receivers. Secondary got burned a couple times. Zabian Brown, most notably, rotated a lot of guys in there, saw the Wake Forest transfer to Sean Jones come in, play a couple times. Jalen Mbakwe got some playing time. What is the issue with the secondary, Nathan? And how can we fix that going into games like Georgia and Tennessee and Missouri, who like to sling the ball around and have very good quarterbacks? I mean, we've seen Nico at Tennessee play very well. And, you know, Missouri has Luther Burden at receiver, and Brady Cook will make you pay for not covering him well.
Yeah, I think it goes back to the inexperience. I mean, these are true freshmen starting at corner. I mean, Red Morgan and Damian Brown both are very inexperienced. And when you go up against a more talented group of receivers compared to last week, I mean, I think there's not that big of a gap, but still, I think there's a difference in speed, and the guys Xavier Brown was having to guard. I didn't think he was physical enough, really forcing him off the line. Because when you're just running with somebody, you're already at a disadvantage. You got to be able to play physical. And I think that's one thing you look to guys like Damani Jackson, who does that well. They're physical right off the jump, rather than just letting the receiver do whatever they want. Switching off of Xavier Brown and putting in Jalen Mbakwe, I think he capitalized on that situation perfectly. He was physical like I wanted him to be. And I don't believe he allowed any catches in the game. He actually had, I want to talk about him a little bit, because he really had a good spark at the beginning of the fourth, where he was able to take a punt return into USF territory, really got us a little bit of momentum, much needed momentum. So I think you talk about the amount of freshmen on Alabama's roster and those who do capitalize and take advantage of the situations they are put in. Because we already know Ryan Williams does that so well. And Joe Mbakwe really proved to me that he is a starting caliber cornerback. So I think there's a lot of guys, but I don't want to just sit here and dog on Xavier Brown or Red Morgan, because those guys are young and they will develop. It's just things that come with time. You'll have to go through and get those game time reps before you're actually ready to go against some of these top tier wide receivers and these top tier offenses in the country. So it's a matter of time more than anything else. But I do want to talk about the defense, because I thought they did a fantastic job. I know we didn't force any turnovers or anything, and Cam Womack is going to talk about that probably all this week because his 4-2-5 defense is made to cause turnovers. I thought there were times where we came close to doing it. I think there are two different times Keon Sabham's got an interception, which he's been a dog on defense. But you talk about what Jahad Campbell has been able to do. He has been the cornerstone of this defense. He is flying around constantly. I think he finished the game with 11 tackles. Yes. So he was absolutely insane. And then a guy who I think only played like 20 snaps. And he was actually ejected for targeting. I can talk about that. That was horrible call. We can't even play football anymore. But Justin Jefferson came in for 20 snaps and he finished with, I believe 10 tackles in the game, which you talk about making the most of your situation. Justin Jefferson did that. He provided so much momentum on the defensive end. I love the way he fought to the ball. I think that was much needed because the defense was on the field more than the offense was. I mean, it was like a 85-15 split, pretty much, something like that. But I thought the defense did well. I thought Tim Keenan did really well. He basically just imposed his will on the offensive line as the game went on. I mean, he picked up a pretty big sack later on in the game. LT Overton, again, fantastic job this week. I love how aggressive he is, especially getting to the backfield. I thought Quay Rousseau did a great job again with pressuring the quarterback, even though a lot of times we struggle to get sacks. Quandarius Robinson, yet again, he was in the backfield a lot. So I thought the defense did a fantastic job other than a few things, giving up a few big runs. And I think that goes back to more not being disciplined enough and having that gap control, because it's easy to over pursue and to not stay home. But at times you have to do that. And USF especially took advantage of that because they love to run the read option with their quarterback, who was very athletic and very versatile in what he did. And then the way that USF ran the ball against that front seven, I felt like we need to do a better job of controlling the line. And we did that as the game went on. But again, you got to start that from the jump. I mean, you can't just sit here and say, I'm going to take a break for two quarters and then I'm going to actually start trying. So there are a lot of different things that the defense did well, and then a little few things that need to improve on, but really just go back to the offense and then not being able to take advantage of the time they were given. I mean, I should probably look at how many possessions they got and how many were three and outs, because it was an absurd amount and we should never have that happen again. Do want to say I was impressed with the way Jam Miller and Justice Haynes ran the ball towards the end of the game. I know Jam had that fumble. I mean, there was nothing he could really do about that. That's not really ball protection. That's just more, he got hit by two people. One went high, one went low. The ball is going to pop out. And then scoring the ball late, Elijah Pritchett did a fantastic job sealing the edge on most runs. I thought that Parker Railsford did a fantastic job at center. I mean, we didn't have to yell at him once at night. I believe he gave up no pressures, no penalties against him. Jaden Roberts on pulling was absolutely insane. I don't know how a man of his size and caliber can move that fast. I think that's illegal. But he was able to clean up a lot. He was a fantastic lead blocker on some of those big runs. So seeing more of that. And then the final thing, I think, I know this goes back with injuries, but Tyler Booker needs to play guard. That is his natural position. He is not supposed to be playing tackle. He cannot pass set like a tackle can. And having to move around game to game and play these different positions, it is entirely different. Tackle relies way much more on footwork and being able to have a little bit more leverage with your hands, especially coming up against really big edge guys. You talk about guard, you need to have a little bit more speed. You need to have a little bit more finesse. Because a lot of times with guards, you might have a little bit of inside help, but you're having to learn how to pick up the blitz a little bit better. And Tyler Brooker is so much better at that and being a lead blocker in pulling situations than he is at having to pass that against a guy who's much faster than he is at times. I think that's a big thing. But again, that just goes back to injuries. And once we get Caden Proctor back, I think Alabama will be in a much better situation I didn't even discuss wide receivers. I thought Jermaine Bernard had a good game, and Ryan Williams, again, great game. Kevin Prentice had a touchdown. Would have liked Kendrick Law to get more involved, but that's just not what the play calling really was able to get him going. And then I thought the tight ends, for the most part, did a decent job blocking. I think there was one holding penalty or maybe blocking them back in a certain situation that it's like you want him to be able to, I think it was CJ Dupree, if I'm not mistaken, but it was one where you got to let the play go. You just can't put yourself in that situation to get that penalty. So a bunch of little things, but the big thing, the offensive line needs to get healthy. And next week we move on to Wisconsin. And while Wisconsin has not played their best football as of yet, they are very good defensively. And if you do not come out and punch them in the mouth, then they will be able to stay in that game. Playing at Wisconsin is a tough place to play. I'm going to go ahead and say that. I hate that it's 11 a.m. kickoff. I think that being on Fox, really, I hate that. It takes me back to the Texas game a few years ago, playing in Austin, 11 a.m. kickoff. I hated that game. So we just need to come out and punch them in the mouth.
Moving away from Alabama and Auburn here, you have some other games happen. Kentucky beat South Carolina. Or South Carolina beat Kentucky, 31-6. Very surprising result there, considering how hyped people were around Kentucky. Tennessee beat NC State 51-10. People had that marked as a marquee matchup. NC State, I don't know what their offense is, Grayson McCall. I think Gray's pretty happy they didn't go get him in the portal because he looked about as good as Peyton Thorne did on Saturday. Texas played Michigan, beat them 31-12. Michigan's offense looks anemic. They need Connor Stallions back because they're not very good. Their defense is good for the most part, but their offense is atrocious. Northern Illinois upset Notre Dame 16-14. That was something. Penn State barely squeaks by Bowling Green after forcing two turnovers, 34-27. The Bowling Green quarterback had two interceptions to really ice the game for him. Oklahoma State has a walk-off touchdown against Arkansas, 39-31. Arkansas tried to get back in that game after having a 21-7 lead. And then on fourth down, Sam Pittman decides to run the football instead of do something else against the goal line front. Very questionable call there from Sam and Bobby Petrino. Boise State loses to Oregon 37-34. Another close week for Oregon against a lesser opponent. I know Boise State has Ashton Genty at running back, but when you play that team and Oregon has all this hype around them, it's expected to be a little bit more of a different result than that. Mm-hmm. Iowa State beats Iowa 20-19 on a walk-off field goal. Tulane falls to Kansas State 34-27. Freshman quarterback for Tulane fumbled the ball for Kansas State's go-ahead touchdown and threw a pick on the final drive. Don't want to blame it entirely on him. He's a freshman, true freshman. He's going to make mistakes, but those were two costly ones for a Tulane team that looked like they were going to hang around with a Kansas State team that might sneak into the college football playoff. Kansas loses to Illinois 23-17. Jalen Daniels looks like a shell of himself out there. Kansas defense is really good, only gave up one touchdown. But when Jalen Daniels throws three interceptions against Illinois, you're not really going to have a great time. And then Nebraska destroys Colorado 28-10. Shedeur Sanders leaves the game early, goes back to the locker room with his diva self, goes on a podcast the next day, criticizes his offensive line. I'm praying for him because after you criticize your offensive line, had to play 10 more games with that team.
Yeah.
You might be having, it might be like the longest yard game where they give Adam Sandler a good old showing and just don't block for him for like four straight plays. Might be some flip four or two for Shedeur. But guys, any of those games stick out to you?
Yeah, I was a little surprised. I won't take the Northern Illinois Notre Dame game away from y'all too. But I will say how surprised and how impressed I am about Tennessee. I'm not even going to try and pronounce his last name, but Nico is an absolute phenomenal quarterback. It looks like Josh Heupel has got that offense the way that they were. I'm not going to say they're the exact same offense as they were in 2022, but they really saw it felt like Tennessee went back to 2016 last year and some of their play calling. It was a lot of screens with Joe Milton. It was screen here, screen that, then throw the ball 70 yards and miss it, then punt. And it looks like Tennessee has finally gotten back to what they were in 2022. Very excited about the future of that team. They've got studs at the wide receiver room. I'm excited about Nico's future. And I was surprised how lackluster Grayson McCall and that NC State offense was. I know that defensive front seven for Tennessee is outstanding, one of the best in the SEC, but I was shocked by that, to see them struggle that much. It just shows the difference between Miami and everybody else in the ACC is just massive. Miami's got a cakewalk in that conference, but very excited. I think Tennessee is going to be better than a lot of people originally even thought.
Yeah, for me, I think we'll get and talk about Oregon and Boise State. Not so much about Oregon, because I think we've already set our piece on Oregon, especially the way they played against Idaho the week before. But at the beginning of the season, we talked about the group of five teams and who would be most likely to make the playoffs. And if these group of five teams can hang around in big games, I think that was really answered this weekend. Boise State, I know they fell short, but for a lot of that game, you really thought that they could win it. Same thing goes for a team in Tulane against Kansas State. They don't make certain mistakes in that game. I think they win it. And then we'll have another matchup with Memphis going to Florida State this week. I think that'll be another question answered. But for Boise State to be in the game like they were, and I thought at times they just imposed their will. They said, we're going to run the ball and y'all are just not going to stop it. And that's just what they did. That is the type of stuff you want to see from these group of five teams. If you want to say, hey, we should have group of five teams in the playoff. They don't need to go into this separate bracket. They don't need to do any of this stuff. In fact, you can start making the argument that two group of five teams could be included, because I think there are several group of five teams that are actually really, really good. And they proved that this past weekend, and I think they will continue to prove it. So that's the big thing I saw. And then I hope I don't take Alex with this, but Arkansas, Oklahoma State. I talked about this last week. I thought Arkansas was going to come away with a win. I thought they were going to get the upset, and honestly, they probably shouldn't have. Kalen Green, my brother. At what point? I mean, it was 21-7. Arkansas really was just in control of the game. They were dominating offense. Their defense was doing unbelievable things. Alan Bowman was seeing ghosts out there. Ollie Gordon could not run the ball. They dominated the front seven, and Taylen Green just keeps handing the ball back to Oklahoma State, and they get back in the game. Neither team really wanted to win in overtime. In one period, neither team scored. They both missed field goals. And then in second overtime, I don't understand the fourth down call. Maybe I really wanted them to go with a little bit of play action, or really just take a shotgun snap rather than go under center against a goal line defense when you still had to gain 3 yards. I think that's a little ridiculous.
Exactly.
It's still a lot of distance to cover if you're going to do that. I don't agree with the play calling. Arkansas was in position to win that game for a good 99% of the game.
Yeah.
And they crapped their pants. I'm still a believer in Taylen Green and this Arkansas offense. I saw a lot of great things from them. I thought they were physical for a good majority of the game. They just got to stop making mistakes and close out games. That's the biggest thing. And it hurts, because this is one of the games that would define Arkansas season. If you start off with an upset win at Oklahoma State and you come up short, and now it's a sour taste in your mouth. I truly believe that Sam Pittman can be a good coach, but we're seeing a lot of the same mistakes Arkansas has continuously made for the past few years. And if he does not get it under control, he's going to lose his job, because Arkansas will struggle to make bowl games. I've seen what Arkansas to be. They can be up here right now. They're all the way down here out of frame. So how can Sam Pittman make that adjustment and get his team to stop committing these stupid turnovers in big games?
Arkansas's next coach needs to hire Sam Pittman as their offensive line coach.
Yeah. I think last year when they played at LSU and they were in that game and they committed turnovers.
No reason to be in that game. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think they are truly a good team. They just make a lot of mistakes.
The Northern Illinois Notre Dame game. So somebody talked about it. I mean, Notre Dame got dominated on both lines of scrimmage. I know Notre Dame's offensive line is not the greatest, got a lot of freshmen starting there and not a lot of experience. But the defensive front and the defense for Notre Dame is your calling card. And I know they only gave up 16 points in Northern Illinois, but the defensive front for Notre Dame got dominated. It was absurd. And then look at Notre Dame's offense, Riley Leonard, 163 passing yards, no touchdowns, two interceptions, 11 carries, 16 yards, and a touchdown there. You look at Riley Leonard at Duke last year, he did not throw two interceptions in a game. And he was really a scrambling quarterback. He is a type of the type of quarterback that is kind of like Caleb Williams. He's not up to that caliber, but he thrives on the crazy plays, getting outside improvised. The pocket, yeah. Improvising. Yeah. And it feels like Mike Denbrock has this offense put into a box, which is crazy to me because Mike Denbrock at LSU last year, Jaden Daniels won the Heisman and he was all over the place. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if it's Mike Denbrock's decision, Marcus Freeman's decision, Riley Leonard doesn't want to go out and run as much anymore due to his injury last year. I'm not sure what it is, but to have him put inside this box has really hindered Notre Dame these first two games of the season. I know they beat Texas A&M, but if Texas A&M was any good last week, this would have been the same result. They would have lost A&M. So Notre Dame, Marcus Freeman, I think he's firmly on the hot seat. You bring in Sam Hartman last year from Wake Forest. He takes a big step back. Riley Leonard comes in from Duke. He looks like he's taking a big step back. So are the quarterbacks the problem? And you bring in a new offensive coordinator. So are the quarterbacks and coordinators the problem, or is the head coach the problem? And I think we're getting to the point where it appears the head coach is the problem. So I think Marcus Freeman is on a very hot seat. I know he's done some pretty good things in Notre Dame, but they're kind of like Alabama, where if you don't win me a lot of games, make the college football playoff, contend for it at least, and he hasn't done that, you're out the door. So Marcus Freeman is really on the hot seat.
That's what's wrong with Notre Dame fans. They think they've won seven national championships last 11 years like Alabama has or something like that. They haven't.
They expect it. Another game I'd like to talk about is the Tulane-Kansas State game. I touched on it a little bit. Freshman quarterback did make a lot of mistakes, but if he doesn't make those mistakes, that's a whole different result. And it's only the second game starting in college football. And if he gets it under control, this team can be very, very scary. They play Oklahoma. I can't know if it's next week or in a couple weeks, but
I think it's next week.
It's soon.
Oklahoma plays Tennessee and Auburn after.
Yeah. But they play Oklahoma. And if he can get those mistakes under control, that team will be very scary against an Oklahoma team that looked pretty, pretty poor against Houston this past week. Mm-hmm. What teams impressed you the most from the weekend?
I'll say two. I got to stick with my answer about what game stood out to me. I got to say Tennessee. I did not think Tennessee would make the jump that Tennessee has, if that makes sense. I knew Tennessee was going to be good. We knew they were talented at the wide receiver spot. We knew they were incredibly talented on the front seven, on the defensive end. I didn't know they would take the step forward that they actually have. You know, I think they're a top seven or eight team in the country right now. And I don't think it's up for a discussion. I thought they would be a middle of the pack, middle to upper pack SEC team, but it looks like they're wanting to compete for an SEC championship this year. Nico is a lot farther along in his development than I originally thought. And just like I said, when I was talking about that game, it looks like the play calling is opened back up, like when they had Hendon Hooker back there and Jalen Hyatt and those guys. I'm excited because Tennessee's schedule is brutal. It is very brutal. They'll play Oklahoma at Oklahoma here in a couple of weeks. Obviously, Alabama, Georgia, obviously, you know, it's Tennessee. They're going to have a hard schedule. Is Nico going to be able to play like that, like he did against NC State? Is the play calling going to be like that against NC State in those big games, especially in those road? Because you could call that was a neutral site game, but no, it was not. There's not that many NC State fans that really care about football. So Tennessee packed Bank of America Stadium. It was not an away game. Is Tennessee going to be able to perform like that on the road? We'll find out here in week 4 when they go to Oklahoma for Oklahoma's first SEC game. That place is going to be loud. That place is going to be ruckus. Can Tennessee answer the calling card right there? My second one, and I may steal one from Nathan here. I hope I don't. It's Boise State. Boise State ran down Oregon's throat. They're outstanding. We talked about a couple of weeks ago. We talked about group of five teams in the playoff, and we mentioned Boise State, but we didn't know Boise State was going to be that hard-nosed running down your throat football team. We didn't know Boise State was going to dominate Oregon on the line of scrimmage in week two. You know, I don't think Oregon is as good as people think, and I know y'all agree with that, but Boise State looks a lot further along than they did a few years ago when they were getting all this hype. You know, Boise State, this looks like a Boise State team from 2007. It's a hard-nosed, run it down your throat Boise State team. I'm excited to see what happens with the Group of Five playoff entry. I think that's going to be more highly contested than we think. Yeah, I'm really excited, and Nathan mentioned, I'm really excited to watch Memphis in Tallahassee this week, because Memphis is one of those teams that is, you know, people expected them to be competing for that spot. You know, do we see the same kind of success that we saw from Boise State, that we've seen from Tulane, that we've seen from these other Group of Five schools? I'm excited to watch Boise State throughout their easy MAC schedule.
So I gotta be careful with what team I say this week, because I said Penn State last week and they made me look absolutely stupid.
Their running game was good though.
It was Bowling Green. That's besides the point. For this week, I don't think I can go wrong with this answer. I think Texas is the most impressive team I've seen play thus far. What Quinn Ewers is able to do is absurd. I mean, stepping up in the pocket, being able to improvise and make certain plays. He just looks comfortable in any situation you put him in, honestly. And he takes advantage of what the defense gives to him, and he doesn't make a lot of mistakes. And that Texas defense is hard to beat. Texas is going to be a hard team to beat because they just don't make that many mistakes. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to play a completely perfect game against them. And even still, I mean, the amount of talent they have, how well they execute, you're still probably going to fall short, because I truly believe Texas is top two team in the country, if not number one. And in fact, I would say they're the best team in the country right now. Based off of what I've seen from Georgia, I think they have a little bit more to work on on the offensive end, just because they've lost so much. But Texas going into the Big House and just absolutely dragging them through the mud. I know Michigan lost a lot of key pieces. I know they have a new head coach. You can keep making excuses for them. Texas just said, this is our stadium and we're going to do what we want. And that's exactly what they did.
I want to throw a curveball out here. We haven't talked about this team past 2 weeks. Syracuse. Very impressed with Syracuse. Kyle McCord comes in there, has a lot of confidence, throws for four touchdowns against Georgia Tech, almost 400 yards. Their running back, Allen, 83 yards rushing. The tight end, if you play college football, you know how good he is. Two touchdowns, almost 100 yards there. And you limit Haynes King. He had a pretty good game, but you limit his weapons to a lot less than what they've used to. Jamal Haynes, only 35 rushing yards. Receivers did okay, but it really fell on Haynes King's shoulder to do a lot. And it felt like Syracuse answered the calling and really held him. The Georgia Tech team only scored, really brought it close in the fourth quarter because they scored 14 points. But Syracuse got the ball back at the end and just ran the rest of the clock out. I've been very impressed what Fran Brown has done at Syracuse in such a short amount of time. And Kyle McCord's confidence feels like it's completely different than last year at Ohio State. The coaches finally believe in him. He just goes out there and slings that thing. And Syracuse might be a very sneaky team in the ACC, because like Gray said earlier in the show, that it's very weak. It's Miami and everybody else. As crazy as that is to say nowadays, it's Miami and everybody else. And Syracuse might be that second team to compete with Miami. I'm not going to say they're going to go into Miami and the ACC championship game if it gets to that point and beat them, but they've been very competitive and look very well-rounded with a new head coach and a new quarterback.
Oh, I will add this. Boston College does play, I believe, at Missouri this week. Is that a telltale game to say Is Missouri an upset watch? And if Boston College does complete it, are they the real deal in the ACC? Can they contend in the ACC? I know we talked about it when they beat Florida State, but now we're trying to figure out Florida State's just very, very bad. Could Boston College actually be good?
Let me ask you this, Nathan. Do you believe in Bill O'Brien?
No, I do not.
Okay, then I think you have your answer. He had Bryce Young, Jameson Williams, and John Metchie, and could not do anything.
Well, Bryce Young doesn't appear to be very good anymore, so.
I don't want to blame him entirely on Bryce Young. Like I said, me and Greg could sit here for about 45 minutes and have a conversation.
That's a whole lot. That's part two coming.
Hear that? Talk about being dragged through the mud.
End the show, Alex.
I'll end the show, everybody. Being great to cease to exist. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching, students of the game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.